collegiately speaking.
Walks into the end zone.
Touchdown.
Punches to the end zone.
Touchdown.
This is Collegiately Speaking with the voice of Northwestern football and basketball, Dave Enning, and former Northwestern star quarterback, Dan Persa. It's Collegiately Speaking. Let's go.
And welcome to another edition of Collegiately Speaking. Boy, it comes around fast, doesn't it? The season flying by. We're already at game number 6 for the Wildcats, the halfway point of the season. Dave Ennett with Dan Persa here. Friday night, College Park, Maryland. The Cats and the Maryland Terrapins under the lights. And the Wildcats coming off certainly a disappointing outcome, but maybe one with some encouraging signs, especially offensively in that game.
I agree. I think, you know, there's not a lot of hope for moral victories, but I think, you know, Northwestern played pretty well. Indiana's a good team at the end of the day. You know, the offense, as you just alluded to, took a lot of steps in the right direction. I thought Jack played a lot better. He was getting the ball out of his hands. He was decisive. He was involving many different players, making plays with his feet. So I think they took a lot of steps in the right direction. Unfortunately, the defense just really couldn't slow down the RPO. And Rourke from Indiana, you know, just made a lot of big-time throws time and time again. Every time, you know, Indiana needed to step up and make a play, they did. You know, a couple of big third downs, a great corner throw in the end zone, that long wide receiver screen in the fourth quarter. It just seemed like every time Northwestern tried to get it close or, you know, to make a tie, Indiana found a way to put together a drive and make a big play. So, you know, while like you said, they weren't thrilled with the outcome, I think there's a lot of positives to take from a, you know, a tough matchup against Indiana.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Indiana scored on, 7 straight possessions until running out the clock at the end of the game. But I thought, and it was 41-28 was the final score, but keep in mind, as you go back and look at that game, that it's a game in which Northwestern rallied and got it to 3 points and then needed to make a stop. And the defense has played so well, and the offense struggled their last game against Washington. And this time it kind of flipped a little bit, mainly because of that RPO that Indiana ran that the Cats really had trouble stopping.
Yeah, it's a tough play to stop, especially once it gets going and when you have a quarterback that really knows what he's doing back there. And Rourke, I think this is his 6th year, so he's about as experienced as it gets. And he was, like I said, making a lot of big-time NFL throws. He's a guy to continue to watch through the season that I think has been really impressive. And Indiana's offense is one of the better ones in the Big Ten. So, you know, while the defense, it seemingly took a step back, I think, you know, there's some plays from Theron, who I thought had a great game, and you know, just the interior of that RPO needs to figure out with the safeties and the linebackers. But, you know, generally I think there was a lot of, like we talked about, a lot of positives, and hopefully, you know, carrying that over to Maryland and you know, getting a really big win for the team.
I like what David Braun had to say about that on Monday, because he said we've had some really good conversations, the defensive staff, the last few days after the game about how we're going to play this going forward, because it is something that, and look, this isn't the first team that's had trouble stopping it. When you have an experienced quarterback like that was his 40th start, Curtis
right.
Rourke. He's got a bunch of guys who can go up and get the ball and made some terrific catches for him. And, you know, they got it going there. There's no question in the fourth quarter. I want to go back to Northwestern's offense, and we talked after the Washington game about some uncharacteristic drops in that game against the Huskies. You certainly didn't see that on Saturday.
No, I think, like I said, Jack just looked a lot more comfortable. He was certainly speeding up his feet and getting the ball out of his hands. There's still some missed throws out there, some out routes to Kurtz and some others that you'd really like to see him drive the ball and step into it. But, you know, I thought generally he played pretty well. He made, like I said, a lot of plays with his feet. You know, he was making contested throws over the middle, which is always a good sign for quarterbacks and them being decisive. So, you know, I thought the receivers played well. AJ Henning had a great game. Bryce Kurtz had a great game, obviously. So it's just finding ways to continue to get those guys the ball and letting them make plays in space. I think, you know, Bryce is about as steady as it gets from a route runner and hands perspective. And then AJ, you saw him, you know, make a great play on the goal line and, you know, another long touchdown run with a short pass. So it's just like finding ways to get them the ball in space and you know, break a couple tackles and make big plays.
Obviously great to see Cam Porter back. But I really like this 1-2 punch with Porter and Joseph Hyman, who started the game, and then Cam came in. But I think, you know, you see it, even though they were playing from behind much of the game and were more in a pass mode trying to come back. But, you know, I think you see that burst that Hyman gives you, and it's really impressive.
Yeah, and he's a pretty stout guy. Let's not forget that. I think, you know, he's a guy that worked really hard in the offseason to bulk up and you know, get stronger, and he's already a fast guy. So I think, to your point, they're very complementary players, and the 1-2 punch of linebackers seeing those two different skill sets really kind of mixes them up. So they've been fun to watch, and I think Cam will be even more healthy going into this Maryland game. So hopefully, you know, as you said, playing from behind a lot, you don't have a ton of carries, but against Maryland, hopefully they can establish the run early.
By the way, this is about the best kickoff return unit. I have to go back probably to like Solomon Vault and Venrick Mark,
yeah,
in terms of it being a legitimate weapon with Joseph Hyman, who every time he returns a kickoff, you get the feeling he's got a chance to break it, and he almost has.
Yeah, and it's fun to watch, right? And that's as much of a momentum play as anything else, right? Once you have a couple of those, he's going to try to score every time he touches the ball now, and you can see that. And then, you know, the offense and defense really respond to that field position change when he makes those plays. So I think it's going to be something to continue to watch and Wildcat fans look forward to.
All right, let's talk more about the Wildcats offense and zero in on the offensive line. Very pleased to have with us Cooper Lovelace, the left guard for the Wildcats, number 70, former USC Trojan, now his first season after transferring to Northwestern. Cooper, Dave Ennett, Dan Percy here. Thank you for taking a few minutes with us, and give us just your thumbnail on what your first season at Northwestern has been like for you.
Man, good afternoon, guys. I appreciate you guys having me on. Sorry, I just got here after practice. But I'm telling you, I'm super excited. It's been an awesome experience so far. I mean, I really love Coach Braun. Big fan of Coach Lujan and Coach O'Boyle. I mean, it's just a good group of men in the building, players, the coaches, the interaction. There's no, like, toxicity. So it's hard to find a place like this. It's hard to – I'm trying to explain it to the other guys, but it's just like you just don't get it how good you guys have it.
Wow, that's pretty strong talk, and I know you have a personal connection to Northwestern. I don't know if that influenced your decision to come to Evanston, but somehow I have a hunch that it probably did, right?
You know, the funny thing is there's kind of two personal connections. So the one personal connection I'm assuming you're talking about is my mother is an alum. And then, ironically, the other one is, so I was a junior college player coming out of high school, right? Because I didn't start playing football until my senior year of high school. And so when I went to JUCO, my JUCO offensive line coach was coached by Bill O'Boyle when he was in college. So I've known Coach O'Boyle since I came out of high school back in the day. So I've known him 5-6 years now. And so when I made the decision, it was just kind of a coincidence that he was here, you know? It was like... like, it really was a crazy coincidence, and it didn't hurt the fact that my mom went here, too, so I knew all about, you know, school and how much she's talked about her whole life. But the main thing was I would have that personal relationship going into, you know, your last year or 1 year after with a coach who already knows, like, kind of how your mindset and style is. It just happened to be two really great scenarios.
Well, it's worked out, certainly. And let's talk a little bit about this offensive line. Kind of give me your overall thoughts on it. 5 sacks allowed in 5 games. And I know sacks aren't always on the offensive line. Sometimes it's the quarterback. Sometimes it's a missed assignment. But still, Northwestern gave up 51 sacks a year ago. There's been absolute improvement there. Overall, how do you think this line has gelled?
You know, I would say it speaks character of the standard that Coach O'Boyle and Coach Lujan set, that there's no, you're not just going to accept, you know, giving up a sack. You know, there's been a couple coverage sacks where that's just ball, you know, they're going to get you or they're going to scheme up something good. But like the tolerance is like, you know, in walkthroughs or pre-practice or in, you know, we're doing good on good in practice. There's no tolerance for just allowing yourself to get beat. You know, Coach always says even good offensive linemen lose slowly. you know? And that's something you really got to think about, especially how technical this game is. So I think the communication that we have between the guys and popping around and the extra meetings that we do together to help us see how many looks we're getting into. I mean, there was games. I mean, even there was a Duke game where they had this look that we worked all week. They had seven up, and we knew the guy over the left guard was going to drop, and I was going to try to pop to take a hit off. You know, it's just like just trying to get those reps also so you can see things before they happen, you know. And so that standard they set for us and then the standard that we're trying to attain of, like, you're going to be your brother's keeper, you know. I'm not going to set with depth just to help myself. I'm going to set with depth so I can help pass off the game to help the center pick it up so we're all protected, you know. And so that's part of what it really is.
Cooper, Dan Persa here. Thanks again for joining. Maybe talk a little bit more about Coach O'Boyle. I think he's gotten some rave reviews from players and people that have known him. And maybe talk a little bit about his personality, what he's brought to the program, what he's brought really to the mindset of the room, because it seems like he's doing a great job.
Yeah, I can't say how much the guys in the room, like, love him. You know, it's like another example is, like, you know, when you get a coach who's honest with you, and it may sound crazy, but a coach who's truly honest with you, whether or not you want to hear his honesty, is something that you can lean on. Because, you know, when something goes wrong, he's going to tell you what he thinks, but also when something's going right, he's gonna keep you in the right direction of why it went right. You know, he brings a certain level of attitude in the O-line room. I mean, he got us a speed bag for the weight room, you know, like those boxing speed bags against the wall. And he bought it to bring us in there to work our hands to get faster. And he's out there. He might have the fastest hands of anyone in the building. I mean, he doesn't ask us to do anything he won't do himself. You know, he's a very clean-cut, to-the-point guy. You know, we're kind of leaning heavier now into outside zone, and he wants us running off the ball. I mean, he doesn't want us checking our feet, and it's just like the intensity that he brings, there's no time that we're allowed to, like, dip. You know, on a Thursday, normally most programs are like, you know, today is a Wednesday, but since it's a short week, it's a Thursday practice for us. Normally Thursdays, there's not physicality because you got to get your body right, but he emphasizes pad level and feet speed like it's game rep. And so when you start practicing like that, you don't have to flip a switch to get to a game. You're used to using your feet triggering at full speed. And so the guys mesh with him. He holds us to high standard, and he knows what he's saying. And, you know, when you ever have a question about this look or that look, he always has an answer. You know, there's never like a, what are we going to do here? And he's like, I don't know. But sometimes there are those kind of coaches who don't know the answer. And then when he's confused, we're confused. So the level of confidence he has in himself, and then it breeds down to us. And then the standard he's set for us is that's what you're seeing on the field.
Yeah, that's great to hear and consistent what we've heard coming out of the program. Obviously, you guys have had a couple injuries, a couple changes up front. You know, what's the mentality? It seems like, you know, the Indiana game went really well. What's the mentality within the room about the next man up and how you're developing guys throughout the season?
You know, that's the one thing they do a pretty good job here is, like, you know, you're not just working – like, you know, especially if you're like a two or something like that, or one of the young guys, you're not just working a single position. Like, if you're working guard, you're working both guards, and you probably have to know how to snap too. You know, it's one of those, like, because if something happens, there's all fine and dandy of, like, you know, nobody ever wants an offensive lineman to go down. I mean, we don't sub, but the reality of the real world is there's not very many offensive lines that can go through a season in college, let alone the NFL, without losing someone. And if someone goes down, there has to be someone to go out on the next rep. There's not going to be four guys out there. And so he makes tests and call sheets and stuff throughout the week so that we have to submit so he can see that everyone knows that you have to drop all five guys and who the mic's going to be so he knows how locked in you are and how much prep work we do. So I think it feeds into as seamless as the transition. I think it came in really per se with when Jack Bailey went down in Washington and how smooth Jackson Carcello came in at center. I mean, he was making the same calls, the same points, and we were able to work together like it was nothing.
Yeah, and you go from having the most experienced guy on the line on your right shoulder to having the least experienced guy. So do you feel more of a responsibility to kind of help Jackson out as he gets acclimated?
You know, the thing is, once we got back after that game, too, and we went into a bye week after that, we got a lot of work in. I mean, they pushed us like it was camp again, right? So we, instead of easing off the break, we throttled. We dropped the center block on it. So we were able to pick up, like, because the thing is, and I went to, you know, OL Masterminds in the last two summers, and one thing some of those guys say is when you're hurt, you know, not injured, but when you're hurt, not playing hurts the other guys next to you. Because then all of a sudden, like, we'll run outside zone, and do I need a two-hand pass off a guy blitz, you know, coming in, or do I one-hand pass? Like, how fast are you going to be there? So it's a lot of a timing thing. Like, how do I know the next guy's behind me when we're working a combo? Is he going to be heavy? Is he light? Does he hit the hip? Does he stack the shoulder? You know, because everyone plays a little bit differently. And so being able to hammer those reps out really kind of took away all the transition that you would think you'd have to worry about. You know, because Jackson's, sharp as a knife. So mentally we knew he was there. And then physically it's just adjusting. He's a hip hitter. Is he stack? Are we vertical? Do we move more lateral? And so once we're able to knock that out, it was kind of a really good fast transition.
We're visiting with Cooper Lovelace of the Wildcats, starting left guard, transfer who came to Northwestern from USC. Is it weird at all, Cooper, to look at the Big Ten standings and see your former school now part of this conference?
You know, yeah, it's not your traditional Big Ten roster, you know?
No.
You see Oregon and UCLA. I saw it was the other day. It was like Rutgers versus UCLA. It was like, yeah, your traditional Big Ten matchup. You know, it's just kind of funny to see. When I was there, I understood when the news broke in 2022 that they were going to do it. I understand the purpose. You know, I understand there's media deals and whatnot, so it's above our pay grade, as they say. It makes the conference way more competitive, though. That's for sure, that everything counts for more, especially that there's not East and West conferences. That, I mean, really, every matchup is important, and there's no sleeper games.
No.
Like, you can't just – you're not steamrolling anyone. You're not playing directional state on a Wednesday. So, especially on a short week like this week, it's so important that you know, like Maryland's coming off a bye. They're coming off a bye, so they've had a week and a half, and we get half a week. So it's so important that every rep matters, that they try to take care of your body. There's that fine line. But I think it's interesting to see, because I still talk to a lot of my friends on the team. You know, it's like, I may not live in the house with them anymore, but that doesn't change that we're still family, right? So I still talk to them often. And so I hear their matchups, and, you know, when they're talking about playing who, and I'm helping when they play Washington about, you know, how they talk and communicate to help my guys out. And so it's kind of funny to see these Big Ten matchups, like Michigan and Washington. That was an interesting one to watch.
Yeah, and Ohio State and Oregon this week.
That's going to be fun.
Before I let you go, I got to ask you this question, because it's such a hot topic in Chicago these days. You played with Caleb Williams, and people in Chicago are very excited. Give us just a few moments on what it was like to play with him. Do you guys stay in touch? Have you watched him play since he's been with the Bears?
You know, great guy, exceptional leader. I could go on for stories for days about things that he did that, you know, you would never hear about in the media or things like that, that speak to his character. He's a winner, and he's a super prepared guy. I mean, I think there's the best way to put it to my previous O-line coach said is there's never really a play that you're out of it when now it's 18, but when 13's on the field. So that's what, you know, he started making a strain for pad level and whatnot. I think Chicago, they don't even know what they have on their hands. It's like, to be able to run the offense the way he's doing, what, five games now in the NFL, is something that people don't understand. Is like, he's operating an offense. You know, you see him taking checkdowns, not trying to throw a 60-yard bomb, because he understands how good the game is. And the other thing people don't understand is how mentally prepared he was. We used to do mental tests before our games here for USC. And so the things that just, you have to stand up, and Coach Riley would give a call, and then you have to give what your read is, what the check is, what's going to get you out of there. And then he knew the protection and how to change. It's just like, there's so much going on that you just know an elite player when you run into one. And if I was Chicago, I'd be extremely happy with what you guys got for the future.
You just made a lot of people listening very happy, no doubt about that. Hey, Cooper, we appreciate the time. Hey, one quick question for you. Is this your final year of eligibility?
as it stands, technically, yes, but we're there back in JUCO. There's an injury waiver we're going to try to fill out just because NJCAA and NCAA are kind of two different, so we're kind of working on sorting that out with compliance. If I get another one, I'll probably take it. If not, then we'll go from there. But right now, technically, I do not. This is the last one.
Well, make the most of it. I know you're already doing that. We appreciate your time today. It's been fun watching you guys so far this season. There's still over half a season to go. Good luck out in College Park. We'll see you out in College Park, and best of luck the rest of the way. Thanks again.
I appreciate you, gentlemen. I can't wait to put on a show this Friday.
There you go. That's Cooper Lovelace of the Wildcats. Thanks, Cooper. And
thank you, guys.
We'll see if there is indeed a show under the lights. They're going to have a blackout at College Park at the University of Maryland. And you know, look, I mean, the Wildcats had a bye going into the Indiana game. And, you know, sometimes you come out, play really well after a bye week. Sometimes there's a little rust. And it'll be interesting to see how they do. Both these teams are coming off the same game, basically. I mean, Maryland's game with Indiana was very similar to the Wildcats game of the Hoosiers. And the final score ended up just about the same, too.
Yeah, it's a big game for both teams, right? They want to get back in the win column. And you know, as you look down the schedule, as Cooper was talking about, there's no layup games out there, right? So every win matters with bowl eligibility and everything else. So big game for both teams, and I'm sure they'll play up to that.
All right, before we wrap it up, as always, we got to make a stop at Chuck E. Cheese and check out Super Joe's predictions.
Prediction, to say or estimate a specified thing will happen in the future.
Super Joe's predictions.
When a football team overlooks an opponent, they tend to get stung. I'm feeling that a little bit this week. As my focus started to shift to week 7, week 6 smacks us with too many upsets to mention. 6 teams in the AP top 25 lost to unranked opposition, and number 8 Miami needed 3 fourth quarter touchdowns to beat Cal. The question now becomes whether these teams will use the early October loss to set them straight or let it take them off the rails. Tennessee had a massive win on September 21st when they welcomed Oklahoma to the SEC with a double-digit victory in Norman. After a bye, they traveled to Fayetteville and lost outright despite being a 2-touchdown favorite over Arkansas. They finally return home to take on Florida this Saturday at 6 p.m. on ESPN. The Gators are far from the perennial contender they once were, and now they get a ticked-off volunteer squad who will keep their focus on this week rather than look ahead to their date next week with the Crimson Tide. Tennessee is one of the more well-balanced offenses in the country. They rush for just under 270 yards a game and pass for just over 250 yards a game. Meanwhile, the Gators allow the second most yards per game in the SEC. Let's play the Vols in a get-right spot. Lay the 15.5, and I'll see you next week. But don't look ahead. You know what I mean, I think.
All right, Super Joe, we'll hear from you again next week. Short week this week. Friday night football in College Park. Dan, have a great week. We'll do this again next week. A look ahead to the visit from the Wisconsin Badgers to Northwestern Medicine Field.
Yeah, bring home a win.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Collegiately Speaking. Many thanks to Cooper Lovelace for joining us. Thanks to our producer, Jack Heinrich, our engineer, Dan Long. For Dan Persa, this is Dave Ennett reminding you we'll be on the air on AM 1000. On Friday, 6:30 Central Time for our pregame show, 7 o'clock for the kickoff from College Park. That's going to do it. We'll talk to you again next week.